Support for this podcast comes from the UTSA Institute of Texan Cultures. For more than 50 years, the museum has told stories of Texas history and heritage from diverse cultures that define the state's unique character. Details at texancultures.com.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Texas state health experts say longer wait times, a reduction in healthcare quality with individual patients could soon be the norm if more nurses don't start entering the workforce. With an aging population, there's a need for more nurses, and the demand isn't keeping up with the supply. More demand, not enough supply. What needs to happen to change this to find, recruit, educate, and then retain new nurses? If you are a nurse or you're in the healthcare field, tell us what you see. Tell us what you think needs to be done in order to rectify this. Lots of ways to join our conversation. You can give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. You could also email your questions and comments to The Source at tpr.org and tweet at us at tprsource. We're joined this hour with Cindy Zelnarek. The PhD and RN and the CEO of the Texas Nurses Association. Cindy, welcome to The Source. It's great to have you. Zelnarek.
Thank you.
Sarah Gill, a PhD, RN, Associate Dean for Graduate Programs at the Texas School of Nursing at UT Health San Antonio. Sarah Gill, it's great to have you here.
Thank you.
Cynthia O'Neill, PhD, RN, Associate Dean of Undergraduate Studies at UT Health San Antonio School of Nursing. Cynthia, it's good to have you.
Good afternoon.
And also with us is Leilani Mercado, Deputy Director of Project Quest, a workforce development program with a focus here with healthcare skills training. And Leilani, it's good to have you. Good
Thank
to be
you
here.
So much.
All right, so tell me more about this problem that we have, Cindy, about the possible nursing shortage. Do we have one now, or is it one that's projected?
Well, there is a current nursing shortage, and it's projected to be even worse. It's projected to be 60,000 nurses short in Texas, registered nurses short in Texas by 2030. There's also projected to be a shortage of licensed vocational nurses as well as advanced practice nurses, particularly in the nurse practitioner role.
And Sarah Gill, why do you think that we're having this reduction in the number of nurses?
I can speak to the advanced practice nurses.
Okay.
One of the big challenges is qualified faculty to educate nurses, and we currently have a large nursing faculty shortage. So the number of students that we can admit to any of our nurse practitioner tracks is limited by the number of faculty that we have to teach them. In Texas, an additional issue is finding precepted clinical sites for those students. So in our four nurse practitioner tracks at UT Health San Antonio School of Nursing, students complete 600 precepted clinical hours. We're competing for those precepted sites with medical students, PA students, and students in other programs across the state and even out of state.
Cynthia O'Neill at UT Health San Antonio School of Nursing, is this crunch in nursing, is it already become apparent in with healthcare delivery?
Well, we know that we have some limitations in terms of clinical placements and the amount, number of nurses that are able to help and oversee the students that are involved in education. we also know that baccalaureate-prepared nurses help decrease the morbidity and mortality of patients at the bedside. And while Texas is increasing in its number of baccalaureate-prepared nurses, we know that that number needs to continue to rise. It's currently about 60% in the state.
So when you say baccalaureate-prepared nurses, these are nurses who have a terminal degree.
They have a bachelor's degree in nursing.
A bachelor's degree in nursing, and like in your program.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Correct.
And so, and you're saying if they go through something like your program, the quality of care increases.
Correct. Well, yes.
All right. And we're having the problem is we're not going to have enough people who have gone through program like yours.
Right. Currently in the state of Texas, there's 122 nursing programs in the state. About 52 of them are baccalaureate degree programs. And we know that the current number of graduating nurses is not enough to sustain the workforce, especially as nurses are getting ready to retire. And we know that nurses are older in general. Even amongst nursing faculty, the age of faculty is an aging faculty. 50% of nursing faculty are above the age of 51.
Leilani Mercado, at Project Quest, you provide opportunities for training, educating a new generation of nurses?
Yes. What Project Quest does is we support participants that are in their first level of training. So they are interested in registered nursing, or they're interested in licensed vocational nursing, but they don't have the prereqs, or they don't have the means to go to school. And Project Quest provides not only financial resources, but also case management, so a career coach attached to that training so that they can be successful.
And Cindy Zonarek at the Texas Nurses Association, how big of a problem is that retaining nurses? Are we losing a lot of nurses?
We are losing nurses, particularly, I guess there's a couple ways in which we lose nurses. Healthcare organizations often, there's a turnover of nurses, particularly in the first to second year in the nursing profession. A lot of it is due to the workplace and workplace stressors. The other area we lose them, retirement, which was already mentioned, and we have the tsunami of retirees, the baby boomers who are retiring, and many nurses are in that league, as well as nurses who leave the profession, who actually leave the profession of nursing to do something else, and much of that is related to the work environment. So part of the challenge in keeping nurses in nursing and really recognizing the value that they offer to patient outcomes is to pay attention to their work environment and really allow nurses to be engaged and to have be active in decisions that are made in their work environments so that we can retain them in the work setting. The other thing that affects nurses leaving what we think of as traditional work settings, such as hospital settings, is the diversity of positions and opportunities for nurses now as healthcare is changing and there are new opportunities for nurses to have non-traditional roles and non-traditional settings. It can become even more challenging for some of the traditional settings, such as hospitals, to recruit and retain nurses.
So nurses, it seems like such a broad term, Sarah Gill, and you talked about advanced practices, but there's all different types of nurses. And what do we need to be really focused? Is there a particular type of nurse that we need to be focused on? Or we just talk about in general nurses? And then there's, how do we talk about this?
So I think there's a shortage of all nurses. You're right. There are a variety of nurses, and as Cindy pointed out, a variety of roles for nurses. I think we need to be concerned with all nurses. Healthcare currently is facing a lot of challenges, and nurses are uniquely prepared to help address some of the challenges for healthcare these days. So yes, we need to focus on hospital nurses. We need to focus on advanced practice nurses. We need to help educate nursing faculty. We need nurse researchers. We need everybody.
Okay, we're going to take a break. We'll talk more about that when we come back. The number to call in is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. We're talking about a nursing shortage. It's here now, but it's going to get worse. And how is that going to impact our healthcare system? And how can we all be advocates in order to try to fix this? This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about a nursing shortage. It's nationwide, and it's also here in Texas, and here in Bexar County. What can be done to find qualified individuals who may want to become nurses? What's that look like? What's the compensation? And what's happening right now? How's it going to impact health care for all of us? Number to call in is 210-614-8980. Let's bring in Lynn Hernandez into the conversation. Lynn is at Fox Tech High School with the Healthcare Careers Program. And Lynn, welcome to the program, and tell us what you think.
Thank you so much. Well, here at San Antonio ISD, specifically Fox Tech Medical Magnet, we have begun to implement an HTEC program, which is actually Healthcare Technical Early College High School. And so what we're doing is preparing students to go into the nursing field. In our district, we recognize this shortage. And within our career and technical education department and pathways, we are working to prepare students by offering them the opportunity from the ninth grade to begin earning an associate's degree in science that leads to a BSN or a bachelor's in nursing.
And tell me what the students are, what do they think about their future as nurses?
So the students that take, so let me first just tell you that San Antonio ISD, particularly Fox Tech, we are an open enrollment school. You know, your typical high school, a student will go to a middle school based on where they live, and they'll go to that high school, the next high school, also based on geographically where they live. But Fox Tech, we're located downtown, and students from all over the county can apply as open enrollment to come to Fox Tech. There are no, like, requirements in terms of academics. Any student that really has a passion for medicine can come to Fox Tech to become a nurse. And so the students that come into our program are pretty gung-ho about this in general. They know that at Fox Tech, in this medical magnet, they're going to get lots and lots of hands-on opportunities. They're going to get a free college education. They're going to get to work with places, partners like Metropolitan Methodist Hospital, University Hospital, and they'll get to do job shadowing and hands-on and earn lots of certifications. For example, we currently offer our students CNA and CMA certifications, and starting next year, we'll be having patient care tech certifications as well as pharmacy tech certifications. So our students will leave high school not only with the possibility or the opportunity to earn an associate's degree, but certifications that will boost their trajectory into the nursing field.
So they graduate on a glide path towards a career, and it could transition to other areas as well in the healthcare field?
Oh, absolutely. Our goal is to not just help them get into nursing, but also to recognize and realize what their potential is across the entire medical and healthcare field.
And I guess they feel like they graduate with a future.
Oh, absolutely. And we definitely do our very best to show them all the different areas, potential areas that they could go into so that their future is a little more certain and definitely brighter and they're more prepared. With our students, when we begin our recruitment, we let them know that it is most definitely a rigorous path, but we have so many levels of support that no matter where they are academically, when we get them, we make sure that they are where they need to be when they finish.
All right, Lynn Hernandez with Fox Tech High School, the Healthcare Careers Program at SAISD. Thanks so much for calling in with that update. Cindy Zolnarek with the Texas Nurses Association. How do partnerships like this, is this a statewide type of opportunity?
There are a number of schools who do offer programs in the healthcare field that prepare students to be like certified nursing assistants and such that is helpful for them. I know myself, I was a nurse assistant in long-term care, and I worked as I went through nursing school, and it provided me with a familiarity with the patient care environment, which was very helpful. So I think these programs are helpful and can help students decide if this is an area of which they have interest. I don't think it's real common for schools to offer dual credit. I know there was a program in South Texas that offered dual credit towards an associate degree in nursing, and I'm not clear if that is what is being offered in Ms. Hernandez's program. But certainly programs that lead towards a CNA certification or even that give students a jump start on licensed vocational nursing are available at various schools in the state.
Sarah Gill at the School of Nursing at UT Health San Antonio, clearly the students who come out of this program are doing very well, but they're not nurses when they graduate from this healthcare high school, right? There's a way to go.
Yes. So if I understand correctly, and there's a couple different models in San Antonio, but if I understand correctly, they'll have the prerequisite courses, several of the prerequisite courses, so that they can then enter our BSN in nursing program.
But it's certainly, you know, we were cultivating a group, probably not enough, but some who can go into the field and do well.
Right, and I appreciate Cindy's comment that they have an opportunity to experience what nurses do. They get to go to hospitals. They shadow people. I think sometimes people think they want to be a nurse, but they don't really understand what the profession is about. So this is a great opportunity for these young students.
Yeah, and so that gap between what people, you know, they're thinking about being a nurse, it sounds good, they hear a lot of good things about it, but they don't really know for sure. We've got to figure out how we can close that gap so we can get more people into the field. And because this is something this impacts the entire healthcare field. Everyone who's ever going to go to a doctor, we need to have good nurses for support. And also, this is about economic opportunity as well. And Leilani Mercado at Project Quest, that's where you guys come in. You see this as a way to provide good jobs, good paying jobs for a population that otherwise wouldn't have access to those.
Exactly. So our average student is 30 years old. That means they've tried college before and then they've struggled. And that's where Quest comes in. We try and meet them where they're at. So we have, similar to what Fox Tech is doing in partnership with Methodist and Christus, a Quest First Steps model. So what the model does is it allows someone to get in their foot in the door in a healthcare setting, in a hospital setting, so that they can experience the certified nurse aide or the acute care tech program. We actually have a program starting in January 20th in partnership with Christus Santa Rosa. From there, that person can then complete their training. Now they have a job, which is an income maintenance job, so they can afford to go to school. And then the employer partner works with them to provide tuition reimbursement. Quest still continues with that participant to help them to their next step, which would be LVN, or even their next step, which would be registered nursing, a bachelor's in nursing.
Cynthia O'Neill, UT Health San Antonio School of Nursing. How old's too old to start deciding, I want to be a nurse?
There's never too old. No such thing as too old. Particularly because of the varied roles that nurses hold and the impact that they can have.
Give me an idea. What's the upper limit you've got in your school roles there?
Well, we've had students in their 40s and 50s that have entered into our baccalaureate program. I'm not sure what the highest age is that's been in our program, but we do have students that are in their 40s and 50s and come into the program. We have a number of students that have had previous careers. We have students who had careers in the military, and then they choose to come into a baccalaureate program in nursing after they've retired out of the military. We have people that come from other walks of life, like marketing and business. We've had music individuals. We do have an accelerated program, which is geared for people that have a previous bachelor's degree in another field, so that could be a computer field or chemistry field or music field or education. And with that previous bachelor's degree, they come into our program and they already have those general education credits that Texas requires, and they're able to enter our program and get a bachelor's degree then in nursing. And those students come to us with a lot of wonderful life experiences, and they really know what it is that they want. They're very goal-directed, and so it's helpful in terms of graduating.
And Sarah Gill, did you want to add to that?
No, I was prompting her to talk about the accelerated program.
All right, make sure we get that out there. Let me go to a caller. The number is 210-614-8980. This is Bonnie, and Bonnie, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm a retired nurse, and I wonder about going back to the older model of having a hospital-based nursing school, where a student can basically work off their education expense.
Bonnie, thank you for that. So Cynthia O'Neill, what's the older model? Can you describe that a little bit more?
So there was a time in the history that hospitals of nursing ran education programs to educate or train nurses in that hospital setting. Those kinds of programs have dissipated across the nation. There's one or two programs left in the state of Texas. In Texas, they're required to partner with a university so that the students that come out of those programs, they get a diploma from those kinds of programs, but they can be fed into a university setting where they graduate with a degree. So that's what that older model is.
Are we lacking because of that? It seems like because with the system we have now with this degree program and it's certified and there's all sorts of oversight involved, we're making sure that there's uniformity and the quality of deliverables when it comes to those students. Sarah Gill?
So I think that's a good thing. If you look particularly at hospital care, patients are really sick. A lot of care also is managed in the community, and those are sick people too. And we want to have nurses that are educated at the highest level they can be educated, that have critical thinking skills, that have a good grounding in basic science knowledge. So the oversight by the State Board of Nursing and the oversight by our accrediting agencies are a good thing.
So Cindy Zilnerik, how much do nurses make?
It varies, I think, by region. You'll find the metropolitan areas pay more than some of the rural communities, and also related to cost of living. And I'm not in the practice setting, but I think nurses, the low end is probably around, for RNs, is probably around $50,000. For like a new grad starting out, and it goes up from there.
Up to there. I saw the average pay for a nurse is about $70,000 a year. Does that sound right to you, Sarah Gill?
I agree with Cindy. It depends on the setting. So Dallas, Fort Worth, Houston, yes, that sounds reasonable. Salaries are somewhat lower in San Antonio and definitely lower in the rural areas. However, one of the biggest needs for nurses are in rural areas of Texas.
And Cindy, some people may say automatically that if you don't have enough nurses, it's because, you know, supply and demand, and you know we're not paying them enough. But you think that is the problem? The issue is more complicated than that.
I would agree very much. I think nurses can earn a fair living. I think the work is very demanding. The work environment can be very demanding. Nurses lead the pack in terms of musculoskeletal issues, injuries. There's also a lot of workplace violence that is promulgated by patients and visitors that a lot of people don't realize nurses are exposed to. So it's a very it's very demanding work, and so I think the need really is to look at that work environment and make sure that it is supportive of nurses to retain them in their setting.
So we're going to take a break, but when we come back, we'll talk more about that. How can we make the job of nursing more sustainable for the individuals who go into this? We'll talk a little bit more about the compensation, how that appeals to some, but it's got to be more than that because this is a job. It's not a job. It's a life, and you know you got to make sure that this is that it's rewarding and that you're not exploiting individuals and they can come back to work the next day. If you've got a question or comment, call in. The number is 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. The source continues right after this.
Immigration.
I think we need to all get in before the wall goes up.
Health.
The Promotora, they have all the resources that can get them the help that they need.
Art.
There's this kind of subversiveness to it, right?
We cover all these topics and more on Fronteras as we examine issues along the border and beyond. I'm Norma Martinez. Download Fronteras where you find your favorite podcasts.
Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio. We're talking about the nursing shortage in Texas, and it's a complicated problem. It's not just because nurses aren't paid enough. It's also because they're put in situations that are very demanding. It can be exhausting. It can not sustainable for individuals. Well, why is it? How can we fix this? Because this is a problem that's going to impact our entire healthcare system, which impacts all of us. If you've got a question or a comment, an observation, we want to hear from you. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Cindy Zolnarek, the CEO of the Texas Nurses Association, what do you see as like the big issue? What is preventing why do we not have enough nurses?
Well, like we've discussed, that's really a multifaceted issue. There's definitely a barrier to those individuals that are interested in becoming nurses getting into nursing programs. And part of that is due just to the capacity in programs. What we're hearing from many nursing schools is that they are at capacity, either due to lack of faculty, there's a nursing faculty shortage, and as well as lack of clinical placements. We already heard that there can be challenges in finding the clinical sites for advanced practice nurses, such as nurse practitioners, for their clinical training. But this also holds true for the pre-licensure nurses who tend to get a lot of their nursing experience in hospitals, and as those clinical sites end up with students pretty much around the clock every day of the week, they're at capacity. So to try to produce more new graduates becomes more and more challenging at the same time that we have a lot of nurses who are retiring from the profession. So that's a key part of the shortage. I think we also discussed that there are nurses who do leave nursing in part due to the challenging nature of the work.
Okay, let me go to a voicemail. This is from Wendy.
My name is Wendy. I've been a nurse for 40 years. I can tell you that the nursing shortage has to do with the safety of being a nurse and being assigned unsafe numbers of patients. We are very passionate about good care, and when we are assigned unsafe numbers of patients to take care of, we find another profession.
So, Cynthia O'Neill with the UT Health San Antonio School of Nursing, is there some sort of cap on how many patients a nurse should be assigned?
So the various practice environments have guidelines related to the level of complexity of the patient versus how many of those patients should be assigned to a particular nurse. What the caller is referring to is that because of the numbers of nurses on the units at any given time and the hospitals operating at capacity for the number of patients coming into the hospitals, that sometimes those ratios are well exceeded. And that makes it difficult for the nurses to give the quality care that they need to give to any of the patients that they're assigned to when they're overloaded in that regard. And it creates a lot of moral distress on the part of the nurse, because the reason that people go into nursing is they want to make a difference and they want to give great care to people. And when they're overloaded to such an extent that they feel like they can't be safe in the care that they're giving, it really creates quite a conundrum from them and a lot of moral distress.
And Sarah Gill with the School of Nursing at UT Health San Antonio, What exactly, I mean, if I become a nurse or thinking about becoming a nurse, what should I think about, like what my job would be like? What do I do as a nurse? What does a nurse do?
Well, there's lots of different opportunities. I think typically people think about hospital bedside nursing when they think about becoming a nurse. 60% of nurses are employed at the bedside, but there are a lot of other opportunities in the community, in schools, public health departments, lots of places. I encourage, as the caller from San Antonio Independent School District, if you're interested in nursing, talk to a nurse, volunteer, find out what the job entails. It is hard work, but it's also very rewarding work.
All right, let's go to the phones with Jeremy. And Jeremy, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, how's it going? So my wife is actually a nurse right now. She actually couldn't listen to the show today because she's working on the unit at University Hospital. So I just wanted to take a little bit and kind of go on what your last caller said about how demanding this job is. You know, they work 12-hour shifts oftentimes. And on top of that, they're balancing, like the last caller said, many, many patients, which leads to a lot of documentation and charting that has to be done. Oftentimes that kind of can push them over their 12-hour shift. I know there are times when sometimes my wife gets home a little late at night because she had to spend some extra time charting and just make sure everything's perfect for that next nurse that comes on the unit. You know, it's very physical, but at the end of the day, it's very rewarding. And, you know, I think my wife and the rest of the nurses are rock stars. You ask any patient at hospitals, you know, the kind of highlights of their experience, and most of them will point to the nurses. He really go above and beyond every day to make sure the patients get the best care.
All right, Jeremy, thank you for the call. Let's go back to Cindy Zonarek with the Texas Nurses Association. I really want to know more about this unsafe violence in the workplace situation with nurses. Tell me what that's all about.
When patients come, particularly, well, pretty much any healthcare setting, often they're in distress. They may be in pain. They may be very worried. They've had some disruption in their normal life. And all of that can contribute, that anxiety can contribute to them responding in ways that they might not normally respond. And often the nurses, the nurses on the front line, the nurses is often in the receiving end of violence. And so, you know, sometimes it's a person who may have dementia or delirium or perhaps be under the influence of drugs, but other times it's someone who is angry, anxious, and may strike out either physically or verbally or even sexually inappropriately to the nurse.
And is enough being done to, is that just part of like, well, you're a nurse, just expect this? This is nurse life, you know, or what's being done to try and tap that down?
Well, unfortunately, too many nurses have assumed that this is just part of the job. And we really, as a nursing organization and nurses across the country, are taking a hard stand to say, no, it's not part of the job and it needs to be addressed. In Texas, a law was passed in 2013, which made it a enhanced penalty, made it a felony to assault anybody in an emergency department, including nurses. We've also seen legislation passed that did a survey of Texas nurses as well as healthcare organizations that employ nurses to look at how frequently violence was occurring and what organizations are doing to prevent violence. We also surveyed nurses and found that 1 in 2 nurses has been assaulted. What many hospitals, many healthcare organizations have done, and TNA has advocated strongly for this, is establish violence prevention plans as part of their safety plan within the organization. There are many things that can be done to make environments safer. Some of those are environmental. Some of those are training and education of staff of how to address patients who may be anxious and may be escalating to try to prevent a situation. Trauma-informed care, which helps nurses be very sensitive to the kinds of previous experiences that make patients more likely to become anxious and escalate in a healthcare environment.
Right.
As well as various types of alarms and those kinds
of things. Yeah, it just seemed like if a nurse is on a floor by themselves or there's not a lot of support around them, if there is an incident like this, there's not a whole lot of, you know, people who can answer a call for help and pull them out of a violent situation. Let me go to another caller. Let's go to Corinne. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. I just kind of wanted to interject that, you know, for moms and any parents really in general, the hours that nurses are required to work are not conducive to taking care of children at all. Typically, the shifts are 12 hours and you can't leave your kid in daycare that long. So unless you have some kind of extraordinary support systems, those hours are just incompatible with being a parent. So that, I think, is a lot of reason you lose a lot of experienced nurses like myself. I no longer work in the hospital. I work in an administrative position because I can't take care of my kids and work at a hospital at the same time. So
thank you for that call. Let me go to Leilani Mercado at Project Quest. And since you do have older adults coming into, they probably have families and they have a lot of responsibilities already trying to become nurses. What kind of support do y'all provide?
While they're in training, we do support them financially as far as childcare. So establishing good childcare, either through resources in the community or actually paying for that childcare while they're in training. But as the caller said, that is a struggle. It is shift work. You work 6 a.m. to 12 p.m. That's just the nature of a hospital setting. But again, that's only 60% of the job. There's other jobs out there, like she mentioned, that she can get into that don't require shift work. But in a hospital setting, you will have, and what our parents do is they work either weekends, we establish support systems prior to them even entering training to ensure that they have someone to help with childcare before they go into class, or that they're looking at the job and maybe working the evening shift so that they could have someone, they could be there during the day for their children and then have someone helping them in the evening, and they work during the evening. A lot of our parents do that graveyard shift so that they can be there during the day to pick them up from school or things like that.
All right, sounds like that when you see a nurse, you're not seeing the support that's behind them that has to be there so that they can be on the job and focus on the job right now, because, you know, they're dealing with life and death situations. You want them to provide health care. We're going to talk about that more when we come back. You know, how can we avoid a downward spiral if we're demanding more and more from nurses? It could cause more people to drop out of the profession. How do we avoid that? The number to call in is 210-614-8980. The source continues after this. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the nursing shortage that we have here in Texas, and we expect by the end of this decade, it's going to be a lot worse. We have people who do want to enter the nursing profession, but we don't have enough people who can educate them properly, get that nursing degree, and get them ready to up to the standards that are in place so they can provide the health care that is needed. Health care is becoming more complicated all the time. What do we need to do that? Is there enough? Is there some sort of policy choice that needs to be made, say, like in Austin, or laws? Are the laws being passed? Is the funding being made available to do that? If you got a question or comment, the number is 210-614-8980. Let's go back to the phones with Gabriela. Gabriela, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I think the problem with the nursing shortage is that it's not just a one fix all. Problem. Pay is part of it, because there is low pay for the amount of work that nurses are expected to do. But at the same time, we're being told, oh, work with less supplies. Oh, work with less staff. Oh, work longer hours with more charting, and you won't be able to pick up your kid from school, or you're going to have to work overnight or the weekends and miss out on all your kids' activities. I feel like there needs to be just an overhaul on how we view people working in the hospitals and trying to make it a little more accommodating, maybe moving away from the traditional 12 hours. There's always conversations about what nurses need to do, but what do hospitals need to do in order to make it a better environment for everyone?
Gabriela, thank you for the call. So that sounds like the voice of experience, and sounds like someone who is probably being pushed to their limits. Cindy Zonerich with the Texas Nurses Association, this 12-hour shift, is that reasonable? Should it be 8 hours? I mean, how do we fix that?
Many nurses really enjoy the 12-hour shift because they can work three shifts and have 4 days off in a work week. So, but it does make those days pretty grueling. And also, we know that nurses can become fatigued when they work 12-hour shifts, and fatigue can mean not safe. So there are organizations that are experimenting and going back with 8-hour or 9-hour shifts. Again, some nurses prefer the 12 because it means you work fewer days per week. I think, though, back when I first became a nurse, there was a shortage, and hospitals explored even 4-hour shifts and different combinations to keep nurses in the workplace. And I certainly think it may be time to explore that again.
Leilani Mercado at Project Quest, we all do workforce development to focuses on healthcare skills and bringing people who are kind of already mid-career into the nursing profession, right? And what are their expectations of these types of challenges?
We do a really good job of assessing individuals before they come into our program. So we talk about their personal life and say, so what does your life look like? Are you the main supporter of your family? Do you have resources available to you to drop off children at daycare? Do you have support systems, maybe not within your family, but a group of friends? It's not going to take just one person going to school to accomplish their goals. They need to have a support system at home. They need to have one with Quest, along with their training providers, to make sure that they're helping them reach their goals. It's not just one size fits all, right? Every individual comes with different barriers to their education, and so we try and unveil those barriers to achieve their goals.
Got an email from Richard. This past year, a lot of DACA recipients graduated with BSN degrees from various colleges in Texas. Are the hospitals willing to sponsor them to obtain their permanent residence card in order to alleviate the nursing shortage problem? So Sarah Gill with the School of Nursing at UT Health San Antonio, we do see a lot of sometimes importation of nurses from other countries. We do have students who are DACA recipients. That would be a shame to see that talent go away.
I agree. I think when we talk about public policy changes, that would be a great recommendation. You know, how can we help who and how can we help people obtain the necessary documents to become legal citizens and help us as they were educated to do?
So, and I've seen a lot of nurses coming in from the Philippines, other countries, Africa, other continent, countries there. With the changes in immigration, has that cut that off, made it harder for those individuals to come in?
You know, I can't speak to that because I'm not on the healthcare delivery
side. I know that's a deep
side.
Cut question.
Yeah.
But it would be interesting to find out if that is just going to make this even harder.
Right. We do get international students in our programs, and there are very strict visa rules about how long they can be in the country.
Right, and they're getting tougher all the time, and applying for them is becoming more and more expensive.
Right.
Let me go to Eric on the phones. Eric, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
I just wanted to say, you know, I've worked in the hospital. I've been working about 10 years. And what I've noticed, I'm not a nurse, but what I've seen is nursing spends a lot of time charting, enormous amount of time charting, and sometimes the patient spends more time with the CNAs than the VNs. And also to add to that is, I don't know if it's because of insurance purposes or cost, but also I see that as if nursing takes advantage, full advantage of their ancillary personnel, such as therapists, respiratory therapists, I think it would help them because I'm a respiratory therapist and we're trained and we know, a lot about cardiopulmonary conditions. And sometimes, bring everybody in the whole team, I think it will help out.
Eric, good question. Thank you for calling in with that. So let's go over to back to Sarah Gill to talk about all this charting. What is all that?
You know, if I have to express the number one complaint by nurses is documentation. And as you know, we live in a very regulatory world these days. So proper documentation relates to billing, revenue collection. If you didn't chart it, you didn't do it. So the liability issues, and nurses complain about that. There is an immense amount of documentation. And I agree with the caller. We have to find ways to streamline that. Nurses are frustrated that they can't spend more time with the patient, that they spend their time in front of the computers.
Yeah, and Cindy Zolnarek with the Texas Nurses Association, do you hear that as well?
I do. That is a critical issue, especially with now the electronic medical record, which is, you know, you'd think it would streamline things and make it easier, but in fact it's become a major dissatisfier, not just for nurses, but also physicians.
And so is the patient contact time being not with nurses? Is this to other people who are not at that level?
I think it varies. A lot of the patient care tasks of providing the personal care can be delegated to other providers. What nurses do that often, most of what nurses do really is invisible. It's not the tasks that you see, the starting the IV, the hanging the medication, and all of that. It's the nurse doing that assessment of the patient, identifying risk for that patient, monitoring it to make sure nothing bad happens. That's why you need a nurse. So that happens in our head, but all of that knowledge and decision-making needs to be documented in the record.
And Cindy, at the Texas Nurses Association, what's being done, you know, looking policy-wise with the state of Texas? Are we funding nursing schools enough, or is there some sort of compensation or problem-solving that can be done with policy?
We've worked, TNA has worked very hard for a number of years, and for over 15 years we have secured millions of dollars in funding to address the nursing workforce shortage. This latest session, we again got $20 million over the biennium to provide funding to schools that are able to increase their production of nurses, pre-licensure as well as graduate degrees, master's and doctorates programs in nurses. We also secured funding in the 2017 session, secured dedicated funding to support loan repayment for nurse faculty, to really try to encourage nurses to go into the schools and teach to help that pipeline. We attempted to provide some flexibility in that program and increase the funding amount in 2019. However, our bill did not pass, so we will be addressing that again next session.
And Cynthia O'Neill, UT Health San Antonio School of Nursing, are y'all job fairs, expos, going to schools, telling everybody how awesome it is to be a nurse?
Well, we certainly reach out in a number of ways to the community in terms of getting the message out there about coming into nursing. In fact, I think one of the best agents that we have in being able to do this is our current nursing students, as they're out working in community settings with patients out in the community as well in the hospital settings, because they're very dedicated to going into areas of San Antonio that may be less served. And I think sometimes in those less served areas, there are potential nurses that haven't even thought about being nurses.
Yeah, we certainly need to have the workforce look like the communities that they serve.
Right. So
we
really
need diversity there.
We really try to get our students out to those areas.
All right. Cynthia O'Neill is the Associate Dean of Undergraduate Studies at UT Health San Antonio School of Nursing. We're also joined by Sarah Gill, the Associate Dean for Graduate Programs at School of Nursing at UT Health San Antonio. Cindy Zolnarek is the Texas Nursing Association CEO, and Leilani Mercado is the Deputy Director of Project Quest. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by me, Ruben Garcia. Dan Katz is TPR's news director. Support for The Source comes from contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.